TheDigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, Show 153, Thursday, April 24th, 2008. Welcome back after my week off. Hope you used the opportunity to catch up on old shows and check out some of the sponsors' links. Please have a look at techradar.com there. I thank them for sponsoring the show and the digitallifestyle.com, so please check that out. So I'm going to gently ease things back in this week with an interview from Amil from Mellowware talking about IntelliRemote. IntelliRemote is a great application for expanding the usefulness of your media center remote, and you can use it with other applications like iTunes or Google Reader or whatever you want, and it's got some really clever mapping functions. And if you've not got a media center remote and you've got something like a creative remote, you can use it with media center, so it's a useful application. I also have email and a catch up of the news from the last couple of weeks. So welcome back, let's dive straight into the email. And this is from Mark. Hi Ian, enjoyed your recent podcast on extenders, and I've recently purchased two DMA2100s. I've run into a problem I'm hoping your listener community can help with. I cannot successfully use my current universal remote with the extenders. These remotes are nice RF remotes and would be expensive to replace, but I have not been able to use them with the extenders. This is because they only learn the commands via IR teaching, where you hold up one remote to the next and teach it the commands. This is the problem with the extenders, because they require toggle IR, where each button sends two distinct IR commands alternating between the two. This results in the learning remote only learning one of the two, and thus each time you push the button it works, but the second push does not. This has been an issue for quite some time, and you're probably familiar with it. The easiest way around this has been to turn off the debounce registry setting. The challenge I'm faced with, and I'm afraid many listeners as well, is that there's no registry change for the extenders. I was able to successfully use the Harmony remote, but I suspect this is because it's programmable via the computer and it's capable of learning toggle codes. Unfortunately, the Harmony I have is not RF, and I can't imagine the pain thresholds of trying to teach my wife a new remote. Do you know any workarounds, or if there's a discrete IR code for Media Center rather than toggle codes? Thanks Ian, all the best, Mark Clifton. Thanks for the email, Mark. It's a great point about the toggle codes there on extenders. Actually, I don't know a way of fixing this, so it'd be good to know if anybody else has come across this. Because using a remote like the Harmony remote or a special RF remote really does reduce the complexity if you've got an all-in-one remote, as opposed to having a remote for your TV and one for your receiver and one for your extender and one for your Xbox and one for your media center. So I think for the wife acceptance factor and that kind of thing, then these remotes are really handy. So if anybody knows of any solution for that, that'd be really good to know. And maybe I'll try and flag that one up with Linksys and see if we can get any help from them. Now an email from Blair D. Hey, love the show. I've been listening for a while now, and it always inspires me with new ideas to improve my media center setup. Keep up the excellent work. I wanted to follow up on this week's episode where I heard someone email about how to organize their music for media center. I use a software called Tag and Rename. It may not look like much, but it works a champ for me. It helps if you have your music organized into folders, e.g. a folder for each album. And then in the software, just navigate to the albums folder and click on the download button, and which allows you to search for the album in Amazon's data, where you can find the match. You can drag the files around and match them up to the appropriate song title if necessary. Then it will save all the correct metadata for you, including the album art. You can of course edit the data manually as well if you don't want to look it up. You can also set it up so when you save the metadata for the album, it also renames the file based on the specific renaming rules. For example, I have it to rename files such as artist, album, song title .mp3. Now of course it's not completely automated, you have to go through an album at a time, but I have found this more accurate to other solutions I've tried. It takes some time initially to go through your collection, but you can be assured that once you've done it, you have good solid metadata, and from that point forward it's simple to run through one new song or album as you get them. I've used it for a while now and love it. It works very well for me and hopefully this helps. Regards, Blair D. Thanks for that tip. That's pretty useful. I haven't tried that, but I'll have a look at that. So on the show previously we mentioned AlmartFixer and MediaMonkey, but all these tools are really useful. And getting the metadata right for your collection is really essential to enjoying music properly on Media Center. So thanks for that tip. You get a copy of Big Screen Headlines 2. That's a great RSS reader for Windows Media Center. In fact, you can listen to this show directly via Big Screen Headlines 2, all from Media Center interface. You can read RSS feeds, watch video podcasts, and so on. You can get a trial version of all the Big Screen applications from bigscreenglobal.com, and if you use the discount code DigitalDeal, you'll get a great discount on Big Screen Global products like Big Screen Weather and Big Screen Photos and so on. The links for all those in the show notes. So thanks for that tip. Now an email from Derek. Hi Ian, I enjoy listening to your show, keep up the good work. From your previous shows there's been a lot of advice given how to convert video for use with Media Center. I thought I'd like to share what works for me. I also convert DVDs, recorded TV into a portable format for uses on devices such as an iPod and Arcos, etc. Conversion for Media Center. I use DVD Shrink along with any DVD to convert the movies into a single VOB file. With DVD Shrink I take out all the elements I don't want, in subtitles etc, and then I use Video Redo to convert to an MPEG. I usually do this kind of thing with Batch Manager. All of the process is done on another machine, not on my Media Center PC. I then transfer files to the Media Center and add them into my movies. This is very similar to what other listeners have been suggesting. I have found this process works well for me. Portable media conversion. I also convert the movie into a format that is more suitable for portable media devices, such as iPods. To convert the files to the appropriate format, I use DV Clone Mobile along with any DVD. DVD Clone Mobile can easily convert files into different formats, such as Xbox 360, PS3, Zune, and various mobile phone formats. The software is good for converting episodic content. I convert the DVD using Apple's iPod Video 5 profile, and found this plays on iPods or on the PC with the appropriate codec installed. I mainly use an Arcos 704 TV as my portable device. This device, along with the appropriate plugins, allows me to view the videos. I have also discovered that this format can also be played from my NAS to the Xbox 360 from the Media Blade. Through the same NAS, I can also look at my pictures and listen to music on the Xbox. This was extremely easy to set up and it worked in minutes. This approach has its benefits as I don't have to fire up Media Center to access my media, although the Media Center is still my preferred interface. Watching recorded TV on portable devices. In the past I have used Video Redo to take DVR-MS and change it to MPEG 2. I have then transferred this to my Arcos, allowing me to watch recorded TV while away from the house. It's worth noting that another plugin is required on the Arcos 704 TV to view the MPEG 2 files. This is extremely simple process and worked well for me. I hope that this information helps your listener. Regards, Derek. Thanks for the email, Derek. There are three useful processes, one for getting onto Media Center, one for the portable devices, and one for your Xbox. And certainly Video Redo gets a mention in a lot of the emails. So they're good tips there, and I hope that helps some other users get more out of their Media Center content by being able to get these content on a variety of different devices. Okay, finally on the email, we've got one from Stuart on DivX Playback. Hey, on show 151 you had a question from a chap called Richard about DivX Playback on Media Center. He said that he installed the DivX Pro package but was still having issues playing back certain AVI files. He will be better off just installing and using FDD show, try out Direct Show's filter that plays pretty much anything you can throw at it, or we could just use the K-Lite full codec pack installed instead of FDD show. Try out, which I found works well, has no issues. I originally installed the DivX Pro package myself but took it off my Vista Ultimate machine due to some issues, but since using FDD show tryout, all of my AVI and also MP4 movies play fine on Media Player 11 and Vista Media Center. Richard could use the G-Spot utility to examine the problem AVI file in more detail to find out which codec may be needed. Stuart has included links for some utilities which I'll include in the show notes. Also, another good tip for the Linksys V2 extender: if you're having issues playing back certain movies on the extender, you might want to look at the 4cc changer utility. Because the DMA2100 and 2200 have issues playing AVI files, if the 4cc code in the file is set to DivX or DX50, changing the 4cc code to XVID instead using the 4cc changer utility then allows these files to play fine. And more information on Chris Lanny's blog. I hope this information helps your listener and he's able to play and enjoy his AVI content on Media Center. Regards, Stuart. Thanks for the email there. Great tips. And like I said, links in the show notes. FFD show has been mentioned quite a few times, so that's definitely one worth checking out. Like I said, everything, all links for that in the show notes. So please keep the emails coming. I do like getting your emails. And there's some great tips coming from you guys now. Ian@thedigitallifestyle.com for the email. You can also help out listeners and readers and users in the forums of thedigitallifestyle.com, so go and have a look at that. So here's a roundup of a couple of news items from the last week or so. First, an update on my Windows Home server setup. Before I went away, I posted a video of the setup process of HP's Windows Home server. You may remember back a while ago I did an unboxing video. Well, this time I actually recorded the whole process of setting the machine up and going through the installation on my Media Center PC and starting the backup off. It's a very simple process, so I just captured the whole thing in video and edited it down a little to make it the video is on thedigitallifestyle.com. You'll see the video button on the toolbar on the site. But if you're curious about Windows Home Server or thinking about getting one of the HP devices, it's well worth checking out the video. And the server's working great for me. I'm pleased to say I've got my laptop and my Media Center PC and my UMPC all backing up on there now. Talking of HP Kit, over the last couple of weeks there's been some initial reviews of HP's new entertainment notebook, the TX2051. I mentioned this a while back on the blog. What I like about this though, it's a dual touch laptop complete with Vista Home Premium. So it makes a great Media Center PC. It's Vista 64-bit capable with 4GB of RAM and a good entertainment PC for Media Center, but it's also a dual touch, which means that it's got a touch screen, so you can use your finger to open and close dialog boxes and operate Media Center. In fact, Media Center works really well with touch, as I've mentioned, using the UMPC. The dual part of that is that it's got an active digitizer for the pen, which means that if you're going to be inking using the pen, it turns off the touchscreen as you put the pen onto the screen, because it's a special active pen, which means that you don't get what's called vectoring. Any tablet PC guys will know what I mean by vectoring, which is where if you're writing on the screen, if your palm touches the screen on a normal touchscreen, it'll see that as a tap with the pen, and you kind of get these zigzag lines going off everywhere, and it happens on the UMPCs as well. But with the active digitizer, it means that the pen tip is only picked up by the digitizer and nothing to do with your hand. You can touch the screen at the same time, it won't matter. And this dual one actually turns off the touch screen as you start using the pen, so you kind of got the best of both worlds. So it's really nice. So my tablet PC that I'm using now, the HP one, that's not a dual touch, it's just an active digitizer, doesn't respond to touch at all. So I like the idea of that anyway. Like I said, it makes a great entertainment PC as well. It's a little heavier than my tablet PC, so I think it's more of a home entertainment machine that you can carry around with you, really. But have a look at some of the video reviews. I've put some links in the show notes, and Warner Crocker from GottaBeMobile.com has got a initial video review up there, so have a look at that. And something I saw on Chris Lanier's blog before I went away: we're waiting for the internet TV plugin to be made available outside the US. But Chris was saying that if you're watching video on internet TV in the States, that Microsoft are adding interactive advertising to it. It's just a learn more button in the advert prior to the requested video showing. And then if you do that, it takes you to the advert. But it's quite nice to see Microsoft using Media Center technology to do that. And and really I hope that we get more internet content through Media Center, and having these kind of interactive functions will make it easier to get the content, I guess. So all I'm going to say is, when can we have internet TV in the UK, please, Microsoft? One other interesting piece of news from last week is that HP have released an update for the HP Media Smart TV. This is the TV, LCD TV, that's has got Media Center Extender capability built into it. A lot of people have been waiting for these to come, so finally, if you've got one of these TVs, you can do a firmware update and take advantage of the Media Center Extender function. So previously, those functions weren't available. I've not seen any out in the wild yet, but I did see them at CES, and it is a great looking TV, and having the extender functionality is great because it saves one more box and one more remote and everything else. So I'll include a link to the video that I took at CES, and if you've got one of those, please let me know how you get on with it, or if you're thinking of getting one, Ian at thedigitallifestyle.com. Terry on wegotserved.co.uk is asking the age-old question, how should our digital home solution work better together? I think the main cause of complaint on that is the lack of integration between Home Server and Windows Media Center, as we've discussed before, and the various workarounds to get them to work together, but nothing that works out of the box. I'm using my Media Center as a server now, so it would be great to have an integrated Home Server and Media Center system. Some people like the two separate boxes, but you know, it would be nice to have the option. Of course, there's other components we want integrating, like Zune and media players and home audio devices, internet services, etc. So what do you think? What could work better for you? What's essential for you, and what's stopping you going 100% Media Center? Leave a comment in the blog, or send an email in at thedigitallifestyle.com. I'd love to hear from you, and we can gather these thoughts together. If you're still using Windows XP, you should see Service Pack 3 showing up in the next week or so, April 29th, I think. I think the Service Pack is more of a roll-up of fixes. There's nothing new particularly in there. But if you're building an XP system from scratch, it's a lot simpler getting your system installing Service Pack 3 than it is downloading the kind of hundreds of hotfixes and patches that have been made available since Service Pack 2. So it's a handy tool to do if you've got to build XP machines. An interesting blog post I read this week from Ed Bott, and as I mentioned before, Ed Bott talks a lot of sense, and he's written another article that I have to agree with. He's highlighted a couple of problems that have blighted Windows, and particularly Vista, namely crapware and bad drivers. And he gives two examples of where crapware and driver problems have really reduced the Vista experience on a pair of Sony Vaios, down to the point where Ed's friend was switched to a Mac. And these were one's a year-old machine and one's a relatively new machine. The crapware was really slowing him down, and the drivers were causing issues. And Ed has some interesting recommendations that I think I have to agree with, really. It's well worth reading the article, but Ed's recommendations were: make utilities and driver updates easy. Yep. Sell fewer models and support the ones you do sell. I think that's a great point. Get rid of crapware for good, and give me the option to do a totally clean install. And I couldn't agree more with Ed, especially on laptops. When you're rebuilding a laptop, getting the drivers to do a clean install is a real pain sometimes, and using the recovery disk that just installed the crapware back on is not ideal either. So I think these things need to be better. And he highlighted something that I noticed as well. On one of the Sony laptops I've got at the office, the NVIDIA drivers were almost a year old on Vista, and there were some issues that were driving mad, especially around dual monitors. But it would never install the later NVIDIA drivers, even though it was a fairly standard GeForce 7400. But I found a site, laptopvideotogo.com, where they're kind of explaining how you can install later drivers on there, so you could use the NVIDIA's all-in-one installer to get the drivers on there. And I followed the guide and actually got this working, and it has actually fixed some of my issues. So I don't know why laptop manufacturers do that, so you can't use the kind of the all-in-one installers, because you're kind of stuck then with old drivers. Anyway, read the article's set post, it makes a lot of sense to me. I'll link for it in the show notes. If you wanted to win a Vidios Media Center PC, head over to Mission Remote. They've got a competition there to give away one of their new Media Center PCs. Have a look at that. There's a nice little competition on there. And talking of giveaways, there's still time to enter the Ultimate Enthusiast competition. This is where you can post your pictures of your media centre setup, which the aim of this is to inspire other users, but also to show some of the great setups that enthusiasts can come up with. And all you got to do is feature media centre and any other connected technologies. You just post your picture on the Flickr group, which there's a link in the show notes. But we've got an Xbox 360 Elite, wireless controllers, games, a Zune belonging to Steve Lindsay, an expert on the digitallifestyle.com. We've got software from embedded automation, M control, voice tunes, big screen photos. We've got a whole range of prizes on there. So I'll link for the details of that in the show notes. Please get you posted in your pictures on the Flickr group. No matter how small, we've got I think it's nearly over 150 pictures now. So have a look at that. Finally, this week I spotted a little handy tool, VMC Deduper. This is a tool for removing duplicate recording entries in the schedule, and it looks like it scans through recordings.xml, checks if any scheduled recordings have actually got files there already. Especially this is handy if you're using recorded TV from one drive to another. You can download the binary to install it, or you can even download the source code and the link in the show notes to the developer's post and for the download. Nice little utility that, so have to check that out. And before I go to the interview, I just wanted to give a quick mention to how well my Samsung Q1 did on my trip to France. I used it for editing some of the interviews that's coming up. I also used it for watching Media Centre content when I was in France, and I just bunged a load of recorded TV off my Media Centre PC onto the Q1 and used Media Centre on the Q1 at the hotel to watch TV, and I watched it on the train. And the touch screen, everything else, it does really make a nice portable media player without sort of being as small as the Zune. I know you can put recorded TV on the Zune, and I do that, but the Q1's that little bit bigger when you're on the train, and you can just pop it up on there and you can watch it with the kids and everything else. So nice, I just wanted to mention that. I also wanted to say hello to everybody that's following on Twitter. It's great to know you're following, and I'm following you all back, so I'm keeping track of your updates as well. Twitter was the one thing that I did try and keep up to date with while I was away. As I mentioned before, it's really addictive, but there's some great stuff there. And as more of you guys follow me and I follow you back, I get a lot more timely information, so that's really good, though. If you haven't checked out the forums, please do check out the forums. Great community on there. So now it's time for a message from One Voice, and we'll be back talking Itel Remote.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MCEach Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Amo, welcome to the Media Center Show.
Thank you very much.
Today we're talking IntelliRemote from Mellowware. And before we dive too much into what IntelliRemote is, and I think it was on the green button, and that's how we originally got in touch, just give us a bit of a background on you and who Mellowware are.
Mellowware is just a little fancy company I started. I actually am a computer consultant in the daytime, but I work for a lot of Fortune 500 companies. And Mellowware was just something I created where applications I wrote on my own free time, I had a place to, you know, put them and publish them and have, you know, forums for people to get a hold of me, etc. So it started out as a labor of love.
And you've got quite a wide range of applications on there, and IntelliRemote is what we're going to be talking about today. But just talk us through some of the other applications that you've done that are on there.
Yeah, I have a couple of open source APIs for Java developers that actually were born out of necessity, where I needed them for an application I wrote called Juice, which is just the Java MP3 editor and library And there was some need there where I wanted it to work just like an old application I'd written, and Java didn't have those APIs, so I wrote and published them. And another one's just a simple utility to help you edit your, you know, places bar in Windows, where I got annoyed that every time I had an open dialog, I couldn't always get to the directories I wanted instead of it always taking me to my documents. So, you know, just things that were born that I felt that, you know, I can't believe somebody else didn't write or were out there.
Right. That's great. That's great. I mean, that's one thing I love about software development, and you know, quite often these things come from your own need, and it's great when you can put them out there to help others.
Yeah, and it always makes you feel good when somebody writes you and says, you know, I've been looking for this forever. You just made my day better. You know, especially with IntelliMaromer, I get people that write me and say, you know, now that I can watch DVDs, you know, on my home theater PC from my bed, I don't have to get up. You know, you made my whole life better.
Yeah, it's amazing that, isn't it? And it's just come to, especially when it's come from something from your own need. And that's one of the things I love about development, is I would rather spend 2 weeks to develop a program to do something that takes 10 minutes when you've run it, rather than spend 2 weeks just doing it. You know, and
yeah, every time.
Yeah, there's something about coding that that does give a good satisfaction when you get something working.
I like the community aspect, too, where people write and say, hey, I love how it works, but what I really do is X, Y, and Z, and then when you can implement that for them, you know, they're just, like, blown away that you can turn around something for them so fast, and that makes you feel good, too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things I've done on some of my Media Center applications, is I've got some great feedback, and, you know, people always use things differently to how you expect, and I think the Twitter functions in my applications are something that somebody mentioned to me a while ago, and I kind of sort of dismissed it, and then started to use it and think, hey, I think they're right, and you put those in because the idea came from somewhere else. I think that's really nice.
Yeah, and it's a lot of times it's something that, like, oh, I would have never thought of that myself because I don't use it that way. But then when you get like three or four people that say, hey, I'd like that too, then you realize, wow, I guess a lot of people do it that way. And then you're right, you find yourself after you implement it, you're like, oh, this is a pretty good idea.
Yeah, it's really good that, and especially when we were just talking before we started recording about the sort of the whole worldwide aspect of this thing. You know, you're in the States and I'm in Manchester, and the usage of, especially around TV and things, is totally different from country to country, so that's how you can get some great ideas.
It really is, and I looked at, like, so far my users that, you know, write in or whatever, I think I've got like 55 different countries, you know, people have written me from. I like to keep track of it just because I'm fascinated by the whole, you know, global aspect of, you know, in my basement, in my free time, that, you know, now people all over the world are interested in.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty amazing. So tell us about IntelliRemote then, and what is it?
So IntelliRemote, in its basic, is just a way of using your home theater remote, and it's actually geared towards a couple of specific remotes. Any of the Creative Sound Blaster remotes and most of the Microsoft MCE variety remotes, even the knockoff ones like the X10 and a couple of other companies make. I think HP makes one also that a lot of my users use. And where it was born out of was I had actually gotten a Creative remote back in 2001, and I loved it. I was like, wow, this is a great idea. But unfortunately, Creative, the geniuses that they were, only allowed it to work with their entertainment center program. So you couldn't use it with, you know, Winamp or Power DVD or any other application. You could only use it with theirs, which, you know, really pissed me off, to say the least. The original IntelliRemote was by a guy named Andrew Schwartz. He had just written it, and it was a simple C program that just basically showed you how the actual remote received signals. So I'm a full-time software developer, so I wrote him and said, hey, do you mind if I use the name and basically rewrite the thing from scratch and give it a user interface and allow people to customize what each button does? And he said, you know, be my guest. So after that, I wrote it. You know, it worked only for Creative remotes from about 2001 to pretty much last year, when I kept getting a bunch of users writing in saying, hey, I have a Microsoft MCE remote, and I have, you know, MCE for Vista, MCE 2005, and I'd love it because I use it for MCE, but I really want to control iTunes or Winamp too, and, you know, they wanted full customization. So I actually, you know, realized it wasn't that hard to implement the Microsoft API for it using the USB, and I was able to integrate it that way. And now most of my users in the last 6 to 9 months have all been MCE-related users, not Creative users.
So if you've got a Media Center remote and you're using that to control Windows Media Center, obviously, and I think I've used my remote to control Windows Media Player, what additional programs can you then control with this add-on?
So what most people do is, and you're right, the MCE remotes are a little different than the Creativeware. Out of the box, when you install the driver, it, you know, when you hit play, it'll run the play command in whatever application you're using. However, a lot of users for example, VLC, which is a nice open source video player that a lot of my users use, I think it stands for Video LAN Client, that doesn't understand those play pause buttons, but they have keyboard shortcuts for Control Alt A is play. And with my program, you can remap the play button just for VLC to send the Control Shift A or Control Alt B for stop. And my application will actually listen to whatever window is the foreground window and switch your profiles accordingly. So you can have your remote do a set of buttons for one application and then have a complete remapping of your buttons for another application.
So that's pretty cool. So normally pressing the pause button will work for, say, Media Center, but for VLC, it's a totally different command.
That's right, because in VLC, they don't actually listen to that. What's called it's like a global hot command that Microsoft has in their API, where most media applications do listen for that play command, but some don't, like VLC, because it's written to be cross-platform. So they don't want to hard-code anything just for Windows. Exactly. So that way you can remap the play button when you're in VLC for that Control Shift A, but then when you're in Media Center, make it back the normal play button.
Ah, that's
cool. And then it gives you remote maps for any application, and that's what if you're just a straight Windows Media Center user, my application probably isn't going to help you too much for a Media Center remote. But what I find is most of mine say, yeah, I like it for Media Center, but I'm also a heavy iTunes user and I want to do X, Y, and Z.
So you mentioned that iTunes. So I guess iTunes uses completely different commands as well. So can you map it to iTunes as well?
Yes, you can map it to iTunes as well. iTunes does listen for the play pause, but it also has a bunch of other shortcuts for navigating your library, etc., that have keyboard shortcuts that you can map to any of the buttons. Like if you wanted to remap your My Videos button to take you to the iTunes video section, you can do that. Where normally when you hit My Videos, it's going to open Media Center and go to the video section. You can actually disable all the default Microsoft behavior and let IntelliMote completely control the remote for all applications, which is what most of my users do. There's a section in my user manual that was thanks to the developer of Media Portal, a guy named M81, he's an Australian guy. He discovered the registry entry where you can actually stop the Media Center remote from doing any of the default Microsoft behavior and let, application like IntelliMote or his application's IR server suite completely control the remote. He's a really bright guy and he's been very helpful.
Right. And you mentioned something there before about, so that if iTunes is in the foreground, it sends the right controls, but then if Winamp's in the foreground, it can send a different complete set of controls.
Right. So what IntelliMote does, I have a gist of, you have different profiles per application, and it's actually listening to the foreground window. And you can say, hey, if the foreground window is iTunes.exe, for example, or EHCell.exe, which is the Media Center one, it'll actually switch that profile by default. So that way you won't have to do anything on your remote other than, cycle through your applications, and it'll switch that profile automatically. And I pop up a little trillion-like window that notifies you that, hey, I just changed, the remote profile, and I have a little icon there. Or you can turn that off also.
I think, and one other use that's just come to me is I have an issue with every now and again where my Xbox, when I'm using my Media Center remote with my Xbox 360, my PC picks up on those remotes. So if I say I press My Videos, it goes to and opens Media Center and goes to My Videos when I meant the Xbox to do it.
Right.
And but occasionally I want to use the Media Center remote with the PC, and having this application would help because I could just tell it only to send those commands when Media Center's active in the foreground on the PC.
That's correct.
Excellent. So that would save me messing with remotes and different configs, and I'd still be able to use a remote if I needed to.
And another thing I added is all my profiles, which I publish on my website, and most of them are donated by users. They say, hey, I use some application I never heard of, like Beyond TV. They send me in profiles that they've customized and mapped already, so that way you can use some pre-configured one or modify them yourself. Also, a lot of remotes, I'll get, users will write in and say, hey, I have this knockoff MCE remote that's got this extra button that's not in any of your profiles. My profiles are just XML files, so you can actually add that button yourself with the signal, because I even published, here's the signal the remote sent, so that way you can just paste in the XML file and add that new button, so I'm not constantly having to keep my database updated with the code, you can just manually edit the files yourself.
Right.
Which, you know, makes a lot of people happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess you could, this also means that you could use any application that's not even a media-centered or media-centric application. So say I use Google Reader, and I don't use it this way, but if I did and I had it my main media center PC connected to the big display and I want to read Google Reader, and I think you can use the J and the K keys to move up and down through the feeds, you could just map the remote buttons for when the Internet
Explorer. And you could say, hey, if Internet Explorer is the focused window, switch to the, you know, your Google Reader profile you create, and that way your next and previous buttons you could map to the J and K keys, and it would do that. And a lot of users use it for PowerPoint too, where they map the previous and next, so I think it's backspace and F5, which are the next and forward in PowerPoint, so they can run their PowerPoint presentations with the remote.
Ah, yeah, that's another good use of it. Yeah, so if you're doing a presentation, rather than using the mouse, you can just use a Media Center remote and an IR receiver. Yeah, it's a really good way of doing
it. Yeah, so basically IntelliRemote lets you send any keyboard combination, you know, Control-Shift-A, any mouse event. I can actually emulate a mouse movement, and you can tell how many pixels you want it to move, or whether you want to click the right or left mouse button. It also allows you the application event. So if you click and you want to start, like say Winamp, you know, EXE, you can have a button, like the power button, mapped to that, and it would start an application. And the fourth thing is an open source library called AutoIT, which is a Windows scripting language. He published an open source API that I use, and you can actually write a little macro script for a remote button. And what some users do is, one guy sent me a script that he wrote for IntelliRemote where he wanted to mute different inputs of his sound card, which you can only do by opening up the sound console window and checking off whether it's a line in or line out or whatever. You can actually write a little window script that actually brings up that window, checks the right box, and closes that window all in one auto IT script. It's really neat. It's added a ton of power to what you can do with IntelliRemote. I mean, in a user manual, I'll give an example of how to start Notepad, write some text, and you know, close Notepad all with, you know, one button close to your remote. So it gives you a general idea of what you can and can't
do. That's pretty good, actually. That's I can see some kind of automation circumstances where you want to do that as well. So that would be really useful for that kind of thing.
Yeah, especially for it seems like a lot of users do that, you know, muting a certain input. Or I know with Creative, they have a little sound console that's in the tray that lets you switch between, you know, game mode or, you know, multimedia mode or music mode for your sound card, where you have to like right click the tray and do that. You can automate that by, you know, scripting a little script that brings up that menu option and checks the right option first. That way they don't even have to get up from their sofa.
Mm. And I guess you could even incorporate things like changing screen resolution. If you've got it as a home theater mode and connected to a TV, you can incorporate all those different kind of things to it as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Anything you think you can do in Windows, you pretty much can be able to do with one of those, you know, scripts. It just takes a little trial and error until you get it right. But the AutoIT documentation is actually excellent. He's got even a tool called AU3 Info, so you can actually like look on any button or any menu option in Windows, and it tells you the information about that, so that way you can write your script and say, hey, click this button with this name, and it'll know and go find it.
Excellent. All right, well, I think what I like about it, though, is the profiles element, the fact that you can choose different command options when different applications are in the foreground. That really gives you a lot of power.
Yeah, it really does.
Mm. And so where is the best place for listeners to have a look at this and have a look at and see how it works?
You can go to our website at www.mellowware.com, which is MELLOWARE.com, or I actually have the domain for www.intelliremote.com too, which just redirects you to our Mellowware site. I got that domain when it came free last year, so.
Excellent. And and is it one thing we haven't talked about is kind of the price, or is it shareware or whatever? What's the sort of licensing model with it?
There's a 30-day trial, so you can give it all the trial you want. You can test it with others, see if you like it, and you know, some people don't like it, and that's fine. But it gives you pretty much most of the functionality for 30 days. A couple of buttons are turned off, and if you do pay, it's a $15 shareware, which I know in the UK is like, with the dollar right now, I think it's like £6.
Not that much anymore.
that's why, and actually, a lot of my users are, you know, from the United Kingdom, because I always write them and say, oh, the dollar must be going down today, because, you know, they're like, yeah, this will cost me even at the pub for a great piece of software. $15 US, and that entitles you to a lifetime. Once you pay once, I send out all future updates to all my registered donors. So.
Well, that's excellent. Whereas I think
the lifetime.
It answers a lot of problems that people have, and especially when people, some people just use, like you said, just use Media Center. But if you're using additional applications and want to tie everything together, then it's a definite advantage just to be able to have the remote to have different uses, and you get the most out of your remote then as well.
Yep. You know, even though they're on the green button, a lot of people have the creative remotes and don't have the, but still want to use Media Center, and they run in like, oh, my remote doesn't, you know, speak to Media Center, but you can with our software. It lets you, you know, basically like you have a Microsoft remote.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. So even if you don't have a Media Center remote, if you use one of the creative ones, you could then use it with Media Center.
Yep, and Creative was packaging them for the last, like, 5-6 years with almost all of their high-end sound cards. So, you know, I get a lot of emails that say, hey, you know, you've made my, you know, remote or my home theater PC useful again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed on the website, there's a pretty interesting and sort of lively forum on there as well.
I use PHP BB for all my forums, and I get a lot of great users and feedback and people saying, hey, you know, can you help me through this problem? Like, and then usually, you know, if they can't find it on the forums, they'll post it like, oh, duh, I should have read that. And, you know, or they'll give great feedback on like, hey, I'd really like it if it did this. And it's a feature I think is worthwhile doing. And of course, I'll add it, or I'll say, you know, here's why I don't want to add that, because it's going to add too much complexity, and I want to keep it, you know, I want to keep it for the home user being able to just pick it up and start running with it and not have to do a ton of configuration.
Mm. Well, I think it's an excellent idea, and it's certainly great for bringing all the different elements back, you know, together. If you're iTunes user or Media Center user or Winamp user or whatever, just be able to use your remote. But I also like the idea of, like I said before, about the Google Reader and other stuff as well. So I think it's a lot of possibilities, and it's kind of a tinkerer's dream, isn't it, to be able to map the remote for any particular configuration.
Yeah, I just never thought that something I wrote, you know, just for myself, just because I was frustrated, would have such a, you know, a large user community and people out there that, you know, feel the same way.
Yeah. It's amazing that, isn't it, when you do something like that, and like we said earlier, you get the feedback in and it helps improve the product, and it fills the gap nicely.
Yep.
Well, many thanks for coming on the show to talk about it. I'm definitely going to give it a try, and I'll include links for the website and the downloads and the forums and everything in the show notes so listeners can have a play with it.
Thank you so much, Ian. Thanks for taking your time out with me today.
No problem, and I'll let you know how we get on. Many thanks for your time today.
I really appreciate that. You know, this is the first time I've ever done anything like this. It was great.
Thanks to Amil. Don't forget, you can keep in touch via Twitter and my blog on thedigitallifestyle.com. I'm constantly updating that. You can email me, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. You can follow us on the Facebook group, check out the videos, everything else. Keep the email coming in, and I'll see you next week. Bye.